Hello and welcome to Press TV's The Debate. I'm Marzieh Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei, as one in one of his recent speeches, had told both friends and foe to watch Iran on the anniversary of the revolution and see for themselves the number of Iranians who would come out to the streets again in a show of support for the Islamic Revolution. And for the 34th year, Iranians have come out in mass, showing their continued support for the Islamic Republic. On this debate, we will look at what makes the Iranian nation so committed, despite increasing pressure on it.
Tehran. These are aerial shots of Sunday's mass rallies marking the 34th anniversary of Iran's Islamic Revolution. Millions of people from all walks of life have packed the roads leading to Tehran's Azadi Square, where each year people gather to commemorate the occasion. Millions of Iranians held similar rallies in other parts of the country. 34 years since the revolution achieved victory, Iran has come under heavy economic pressure from the U.S. and other Western states that have only intensified in recent months.
Deep down in their heart, people fully support the revolution. Therefore, hopefully this year's rally will be a big blow to the U.S.
Despite all the propaganda, people will never abandon their revolution.
People are aware that many of the economic problems they are facing is part of a foreign plot. Therefore, they won't be abandoning their revolution because of economic hardships.
Under whatever economic conditions, and even if they have to go without staple food, our people will never give up the goals of the revolution and their leader.
The high popular turnout has stunned many observers who say the participation of millions and millions of Iranians in these rallies is a sign of national solidarity and a strong leadership. What's remarkable, they say, is that the Islamic Republic has been growing stronger despite years of threats and pressure. Iran's Islamic Revolution is seen as a turning point in the history of the region and the world, and a source of inspiration for the popular uprisings in the Middle East and North Africa that toppled dictatorships one after the other. Many believe the people who led the regional uprisings can view Iran's Islamic Revolution as a model of a popular movement that managed to see its goals fulfilled.
Well, I'd like to welcome my guest right here in Tehran from the University of Tehran, Professor Mohammad Marandi. And out of Washington, from the board president and senior fellow for national security, we welcome Frederick Peterson III. And out of London, political commentator Chris Bambury. Welcome all of you to the program. Well, let's start this off right here in Tehran with Mr. Marandi. Now, the sanctions have been harsh, especially during the last year, punishing financial entities such as banks, and when Iran, of course, sells a product, is with great difficulty that it can get paid and bring the money back into the country. Now, despite this pressure, once again, we've seen millions of people take to the streets around the country, showing their allegiance to the nation. Why is that the case? Why do the Iranian people continue to support the Islamic Republic?
In my opinion, it, to a large degree, has to do with the behavior of the United States itself. The United States has been behaving both in an uncivilized manner and irrationally with regards to Iran. For over three decades now, the United States has failed to recognize really the independence of the Iranian people and the meaning of revolution in Iran, where American hegemony at all levels, whether cultural, economical, military, political and social, have been rejected by the Iranian people. The United States, of course, also fails to recognize the grievances of the Iranian people that go back many decades before the revolution, when the coup d'etat, along with the British, brought the Shah back to power, and the United States supported his despotism, and then, of course, U.S. support for the Shah till the very end, and Western and U.S. support for Saddam Hussein. And of course, the current sanctions, which are directed at ordinary people. The U.S. Secretary of State has basically said that the objective is to make ordinary Iranians suffer so that they would put pressure or turn against the Islamic Republic or the government.
And with that being the case, if the objective is to put more pressure, then probably under there, when they're calculating, talking about Washington, if we're talking about more pressure, then they're expecting the people actually not to turn out on a day like today, not to support the government. What makes the Islamic Republic different from perhaps many other movements or revolutions?
Well, hopefully the mentality that exists in Iran exists in many other countries as well. But Iranians are adamant to have their independence, just as they were adamant to see the Shah go. They are adamant to see American hegemony removed for good from this country.
Okay. And all right. Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Morandi, but let me turn to Washington and get Frederick Peterson in on this discussion now. Mr. Peterson, we've seen the difficulties that these newly revolutionary countries such as Egypt and Tunisia are going through. And when you put this in the context of what Iran went through 34 years ago, in addition, of course, to fighting an 8-year imposed war, what's your thought? How do you evaluate the Islamic Republic then and now?
Well, I'll say that the revolution in 1979 ended forever, apparently, more than 2,000 years of a regent, king, and created, left in its place, a large question mark. It ended the past, and the question is, where would it go in the future? Provided a tremendous history and gifts that it has to give to the world, or will it become irresponsible and foster terrorism and irresponsibility and instability in its neighborhood? I would say there still is a question mark over the revolution as to where it is ultimately heading. It is not unusual at all to see peoples rallying around a government when they are apparently cultivated and then apparently pressured from the outside, as well as the sanctions of many nations upon Iran are doing.
Okay.
They are hurting not the leaders of the government, not those who are making the decision, they're hurting the common people.
And of course, you've just pointed out something. Let me just jump in here. But you've just pointed out something, Mr. Peterson. It actually goes against what the American officials are saying, because, of course, they had said that these sanctions have nothing to do really with the people, but directed towards the leadership. But let me switch over to London and get Chris Bambury in on this. Your perspective, Mr. Bambury, to Mr. Peterson's comments that basically, even after 34 years, the Islamic Republic is not showing what direction it wants to go in. And also not very neighborly to other countries in the region.
Well, I think we have to understand what being a good neighbor means in terms of Washington. It means adopting a neoliberal economic model, which is in trouble right across in the Western world. Washington would insist on that. It would mean cozying up to Israel. Washington would insist on that, and indeed to Saudi Arabia, a despotic regime. And it would mean complying with United States foreign policy in this so-called war on terror. None of that is acceptable, in my opinion, to the Iranian people. And the reason for that is quite simple. And I think the first guest made the point. The Iranian people remember the history of both America and Britain in this country, installing the Shah in 1942 by the occupation of the country by the British and Russians. Then the coup in 1952 overthrowing the Mossadegh regime because it dared to nationalize British and American oil. The regime of the Shah, which was truly despotic with Savak, the torture agents, they remember all that. And they remember America and Britain urging Saddam Hussein into war. And finally, when that war was going wrong in 1987, America and Britain intervened on behalf of Iraq and the shooting down of a civilian aircraft liner with over 280 people killed. And what I think we are seeing, and I think your guest in Washington is right about this, is that faced with the attacks from America and the European Union, the sanctions which are aimed at the ordinary people of Iran, the people are reacting against what America and Britain and other European countries are doing, and they're reacting because of their memory, their strong memory of what the West has done in Iran. And
okay.
I see no evidence that people in Iran want to adopt what is called a good neighbor policy.
Mr. Morandi, your take on that. Both our guests say they see more of this as a reaction to the United States. Is it more a vote against the United States more than pro-Islamic Republic? Or how do you see this massive turnout one more time?
I think it's a combination of both. Obviously, when, for example, we saw the recent parliamentary elections, the turnout was 65%. The previous presidential elections, 80-some percent. And we've, throughout the post-revolutionary period, we've had different political parties and factions. So Iran is not a society which is closed and where people do not know what is going on. We have, even as we speak, different political factions and political parties are preparing themselves for the presidential elections as well as for the city council elections. You have all sorts of diverse, within the reformist camp you have different factions, within the so-called principalist camp you have different factions, and the current president has his own supporters. So it's a diverse country which is inclusive, and it also is something in which is in tune with the culture of the Iranian people. It is a participatory system which has which includes the elements of Iranian local culture and religion. And this is something that we see now most people in the region want as well. The problem is that the United States has been supporting the most despotic regimes in this region, like Saudi Arabia, like Qatar, which have no constitution, where people have no right to vote, yet they're close allies of the United States, or Israel, which is an apartheid state, an extremely racist state. Yet the United States likes to portray Iran as a dictatorship or as an evil country. Iran is the victim in this region. It is Iraq under Saddam Hussein with Western support that invaded the country. Right now, Saudi Arabia has occupied Bahrain. You see Turkey helping Qatar and Saudi Arabia, two oil-rich dictatorships, to create a civil war in Syria. And right now, of course, we have Western countries bombing Libya. They have bombed Libya, destroyed the infrastructure. Now we have Mali, and of course Iraq and Afghanistan. Okay. In other words, Western countries, while they try to depict Iran in a very negative light, if they look more carefully, they'll see that the crimes that have been committed in this region have been either directly or indirectly as a result of their own policies.
All right. Well, let's switch over to Facebook. We've had the question that was asked is, what do you think about the role of the Iranian people in keeping the revolution alive throughout the past three decades? Let's listen up.
Resisting imperialism and Zionism for the last 34 years, and they show no signs of wavering. Wiz Wizra Ukhra, congratulations from Malaysia and well done, Iran. Your resistance makes us Muslims proud. Shibli Mir, a great Muslim nation with energetic, honest people who are fighting against imperialism and crime committed by arrogant power. But satisfaction may ruin the possibility. There are so many work which are yet to be done.
Well, Mr. Peterson, let me get you back on this. This is just some comments coming from all over the world. And it seems that Iran on the international arena, I want to look at that, your perspective, because it definitely appears that it plays a big role on the international arena. How do you see Iran's role on the international stage?
Well, once again, I would say that Iran represents, as a people, a tremendous cultural asset to the world, and a long history that makes the world richer. However, one would have to fairly say that Israel is not threatening Iran. Israel has been the recipient of tremendous insult and threat and incoming missiles on all borders and terrorist events within within their own national sovereignty and around the world as a result of terrorists that too often are supported in words, if not deeds, by their enemies around the world. And if this had been done to Iran, one would expect justifiably a response from Iran. But it's apparently not that way.
All right, well, let's turn to London. What about that, Mr. Bamery, what Mr. Peterson is saying? I asked about the role of Iran on the international stage. Of course, he switched over to Israel. How do you see that perspective in general and your perspective about the role that Iran plays in the international arena?
Well, Israel has a long record of aggression, including recently the invasion of southern Lebanon and a siege of Gaza involving two military incursions. And in the longer term, it's been an aggressive entity. And I think comparing the resistance to the Israelis, which is the most powerful state in the region because of the American and Western backing, it also has a European-style economy because of the money that's pumped into it. The living standards are higher. It's like comparing Goliath and David. Those people fighting back are fighting back against a military entity. And I think it's to Iran's credit that it supported Hezbollah in resisting the Iranians, the Israelis, and it supported the people of Gaza in their resistance. And it's to the shame of many Arab regimes, including that in Egypt, that they didn't offer that support as well. So therefore, I think it's a matter of pride to people in Iran that actually they have supported the resistance against Israeli aggression. And as far as I'm concerned, that is not a crime. That is something to be celebrated, given the track record of Israel. And I think in general as well, the attempts to lump Iran into the so-called axis of terror, which Washington despised, is almost farcical when you look at what's involved. And I think the first guest as well, if I may say so, is absolutely right. There is constant attacks on Iran, which has got a rich cultural life. Witness the current film festival, which is taking place. Nothing is said by the West about Saudi Arabia, which is a brutal despot regime with a terrible record of it. And largely the West and America remain silent about what is happening in Bahrain, where the Al-Khalifa people, with the aids of the Saudis, are crushing their own people.
Okay.
And therefore, when it comes to the attack on Iran, I think it's hypocrisy.
Well, Mr. Morandi, what do you see as the biggest accomplishment of the Islamic Republic in these 34 years?
Well,
I'll get you. I'm sorry, Mr. Peterson. You raised your finger just a little late. If I had seen it, I would have gone to you. But let me just go to this question in Tehran, and I'll get back to you in Washington.
Sure. Well, I think one is Iran's opposition to Israel. This was something that existed before the revolution. There were two countries that Ayatollah Khomeini opposed, and so did the revolutionary movement. One was apartheid South Africa, and the other was the apartheid state of Israel. And it was not because it was Jewish, just like it was not because South Africa was dominated by the white. It was because minorities were imposing themselves upon majorities, or even majorities imposing themselves on minorities based upon racism. And Iran was opposed to racist apartheid in South Africa and opposed to the principle of Zionism as a racist ideology. So that is a moral foreign policy principle of Iran's. Beyond that, of course, I think perhaps the most important thing, or one of the most important things, is the liberation of the Iranian mind. The colonial past where Western powers tried to impose the idea that they are the center of the world, that they have to determine how countries are run, that they have to have the keys of power in all the countries, and that independent countries simply cannot survive and thrive. Iran has shown that this is completely false. Despite the sanctions, despite war, and despite the hostility, you see now Iran is one of the few countries that sends satellites into orbit. It has a thriving nanotechnology industry. It has a thriving defense industry to defend the country. Advanced fighter jets are produced in this country. This is something that we couldn't even dream of 3 decades ago in this country. So independence is very important, both at the material level, but I think also at the moral level, or let me be precise, mentally speaking, Iranians understand and recognize that they can stand on their two feet, on their own feet, and resist hegemony.
Okay, Mr. Peterson, you want to make a comment. Go ahead, please.
Yes, and also to what was just said, you know, if the minds and the science and the culture of Iran was devoted to positive contribution to the world and not threatening neighbors and sponsoring attacks on neighbors via client groups such as Hamas and Hezbollah, it would be a wonderful contribution to make to a civilizing, more peaceful, growing world. Now, the remark that, and I really hate to be in the position of continuing to appear to defend Israel or Saudi Arabia, which we haven't, which certainly has enough faults, but to say that Israel, which has had thousands of missiles raining upon its cities, killing innocents, terrorist incidents within their border, and to have them finally in frustration strike back, and to call the striking back an aggression, is almost laughable on its face.
Okay, Mr. Peterson, I don't want to get off track. I don't want to get off track. However, it was the Israelis that we know that killed thousands in Gaza. And it was not, of course, the Palestinians in Gaza who killed thousands in Israel, just for the record. But let me turn to London and get Chris Bambury back in on this discussion. Your final comments. Where do you see the future going for the Islamic Republic? Because we're just about out of time.
I think we have to remember the 1917 Iranian Revolution was one of the great revolutions of the 20th century, involving millions of people, literally millions of people. I remember a demonstration of millions in the beginning of 1979 against the Shah. And I think the legacy of that revolution remains in place. But I think above all, there is a nationalism and a pride in Iran. And the sanctions and the threats, the military buildup in the Persian Gulf, the surrounding of Iran by American bases, all of that is fueling a sense that people have to stand up and stand up for Iran. And even people who disagree with the government in Iran will rally behind defense of self-determination, rally behind independence in the face of these threats. And I don't think the West understands that. I don't think they understand their own history in the region, understand what they did in supporting the Shah when, incidentally, they were in favor of Iran having a nuclear energy program and encouraged the Shah to invest in it. Changed days today, but that was okay in the 1970s. They don't understand the legacy. But then America, Britain didn't understand in Afghanistan, in Iraq, and elsewhere around the world what its legacy is
okay.
And why people might oppose what they're doing.
All right. Well, thank you. I'm so sorry to interrupt you, but we are out of time. I thank all of my guests out of Tehran right here in the studio. From the University of Tehran, Mr. Mohammad Marandi. Out of Washington, Board President and Senior Fellow for National Security, Mr. Frederick Peterson III. And out of London, political commentator, Mr. Chris Bambury. And as always, viewers, we appreciate you being right with us. And make sure you join us right here, same time, same place, on another look at the debate tomorrow. I'm Marzieh Hashemi, signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Thanks so much, and goodbye.